Blog Talk Radio.
That ought to shake things up. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Exploring Ekphrasis, your Saturday night delve into the realm of surrealism, poetry, and artwork, and the marriage of both. And that, what you just heard was, now you're probably familiar with the Bananarama version of Venus, which is an excellent, excellent version. What you heard was the original, was Venus by Shocking Blue, released in 1969. And the reason I used that, I selected that music to open our show, is because our featured artist for this evening, John Petrie, was very, very popular in the 70s for his poster artwork. And it was not uncommon to find his posters gracing people's offices and homes and what have you. Very, very popular artwork. So I thought delving into a little bit of vintage music would be a good way to start the show. So as my co-pilot on board.
I am here, Bobby. Absolutely. And that was great. I was rocking out to that one. I'm pretty sure I heard that version before, but that's got an awesome beat to it. I loved it.
Yeah. Panorama did a good rendition. That's the original.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
There's been
so many versions of that song. I love the original. The original is fantastic.
Yeah.
And if anybody hasn't noticed, our illustrious leader, Kevin, has played yet another April Fool's joke on us. And
yes,
if your if your little screen looks all kinds of crazy, just hit the shake it button that he provided, and things will look normal again. But yes, he did the same joke last year.
Little,
so
little sophomoric humor.
A little sophomoric humor. Yes, absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there you go, Kevin. I like it. I like it. Good job. That was fun. Although it'll be interesting as I go from screen to screen to screen and have to keep hitting the shake it button. I'll be like, all right, Kevin, enough. That's it. But
yeah.
It is what it is. Yeah, I'm very excited. This is an interesting show. We actually, everybody, we got a lot of rallying today. We didn't have a lot of poems,
yeah.
But we had a bunch come on today, which is great. And I love this artist. I wasn't familiar. I'm not. Bobby always teaches me about art, but I'm a huge sci-fi, like fantasy nerd. So this art is right up my alley. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
I do apologize for being so late on posting that. Usually I give folks plenty of lead time on our contests, but I notice they do languish, but that's okay. I'd rather them have more airtime than less. And I was a little late getting this one up and on board, but a little turbulent here at Schloss Breeden, things going on. And when I finally got the dust settled, I was able to get the contest going and post it. Have no fear, though. I've made up for lost time, and the next one is almost finished. And I'll announce who the artist is at the end of our show tonight.
Awesome.
I think people have a good time with this one too. So
I think we gotta go more with the rock and roll. Amy, Amy looks like she was rocking out to your song. We got another big board here tonight. We got Amy on the board. We got Jenny. We got Gray
yeah.
in the background here. I think Stelina is there as well too, and I think Phil is around too. So we got a group.
Great. Well, I promise everyone that appropriate to the seasonal change, I will play Bananarama's "Cruel Cruel Summer" later on this year.
There you go. Okay, excellent. Hey, yet another song they didn't write. That's okay.
Yeah.
Cover after cover. That's I'm seeing them again now that time has passed even more. We're seeing the third and fourth versions of songs from the 60s are starting to come out, which is okay. Keep them alive.
I probably shocked the hell out of everybody because they probably expected us to open with something classical or serene or something like this, and we start rocking and jamming. So I thought it'll be a little bit different and shake it up. So let's get.
Yeah, they didn't know you rocked, Bobby, but there you go.
I do. I have that. The rocking gene is latent, but it's there.
There you go. Excellent. All right, yeah, let's actually get started. So we have a bunch from last time, so we're going to get started with that. And as always, ladies first, so I'm going to post one for you here, Bobby, absolutely. And let's see here. So if you would read that first one, that would be great.
I will do that. We have Sea Glass. Although I thought we had done this one, but you know what? I will read it again. Prompt 23, Sea Glass by Anna Kulota, 21. Heart beating so fast, you make my palms sweaty. Your love grants me peace. With you, I can change my world simply because my perspective of that world has changed. I see it clearly like the sea glass on the ocean floor. I wonder how long it took for it to get where it needed to be, making it so beautiful. The ocean helped me make it that way, guiding the change. Your love is my ocean. End poem.
Awesome read. Excuse me. And I like that. It's a great metaphor. Nice little, I would call it a brevity. It's a short poem, at least in my book, mine are usually 400 or 500 words. I think the sea glass is really interesting. It takes so long to make, right? And it is a really beautiful, it is really, really beautiful, comes from the ocean. And, just to say, to use that as a metaphor, the perspective of the world has changed. I see it clear like the sea glass on the ocean floor. How long did that take to happen? And, I think about that in my life a lot too. Like, where was I my kid's age? And, you know, now in my 50s, life is so much different. It's so much of a perspective. I have so much history behind that, you know, and how long does that kind of thing take to happen? Now I know she's talking more about love here, but it's the same type of thing. You know, how long does it take for true perspective and true, longing to come about? So I thought it was, it's a really, really beautiful and great metaphor. And I loved it. Anna, nice job. Bobby, your thoughts, please.
I liked the metaphor. I thought it was very elegant. It gets simple, and as the ocean makes it makes the glass beautiful, and their love is her ocean. And I thought that was a very it was unique. It was unique. It was insightful. It was a metaphor that I hadn't considered, but I thought the insight into it was very very clever, very skillful. My perspective of the world has changed. I see it clearly, like the sea glass on the ocean floor, or to be where it needs to be to make it beautiful, guiding the change. Your love is my ocean. I liked it also. I thought it was a very nicely done brevity. I thought there was a lot of meaning in a short piece of work, but very well done, and it got honorable mention.
Absolutely, yeah, well deserved. Yeah, the talent on this website never ceases to amaze me. It really doesn't. I didn't know what to expect when I first came on here, and it blows me away every day. I was actually reading through a bunch of new poems, new artists, the other day, and I was just so shocked at how much how much great talent there is that just keeps coming on here. So awesome.
Yes.
All right, we are going, just like Zeus said to Poseidon, we are, let's a kraken. Let's keep a kraken. Sorry, that was a really bad joke. But
that's the best you can do.
It's a long day. The best I can do. I'm so sorry.
That's your best shot.
That's my best shot. That's my best shot.
Read the poem, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you guys are in for a treat because I'm not even going to read this poem because this is from our good friend Scott Sharp, and he has a SoundCloud. Yeah, so if we could get that SoundCloud, that would be great.
Tired pools reflect vagabond eyes glass over. Tired pools reflect exhausted sunset, a drying climate along once vibrant rivers that now trickle in once thriving veins. Unwilling traveler amidst makeshift hijab of necessity, threadbare in hope, snagged in unraveling amongst the conflicts and climaxes of the yarn and unintelligible world unspools, straddling fault lines here and there, dust fills the voids, tears in a planet's skin allow infection, spinning into the solar winds, time will heal that which splits the fabric of common purpose. Eyes glass over, tired pools reflect, powerless tides pulled by an aggressive moon crash upon the shore, erasing my footprints. I walk renewed again.
Well, great read. Scott always brings some great passion to his reads. Do you want to start us off, Bobby?
Sure. I was looking at the prompt that he selected, and it was a black and white, and it was the one of the young girl, who has half of her face covered by almost like either a hood or a hijab, and she's peering out of one side. And beautiful face for what you can see of the half of it. But a very pensive look on her face. And that was the prompt that he used. And I like the way he says, vagabond eyes glass over, tired pools reflect. And that's what it looks like. Her eye looks like it's glass. It's glassed over. It's glazed. She's doing a thousand-yard stare. Here and there, dust fills the void, tears in a planet's skin, allowing an infection. And then he repeats the first stanza again at the end, which I thought was a great touch but it alters it ever so slightly. Powerless tides pulled by an aggressive moon crash upon the shores, erasing my footprint. I walk renewed again. It's an affirmation, whereas the first one was somewhat a negative. That the last stanza has the least hint of positive to it, and this was also an honorable mention.
Yes, and definitely well deserved. Yeah, I did like that repeat of the first stanza. It was very interesting. Many times I see Scott have a very scientific flow to his poems. I think he thinks about the way the world works and nature and science a lot. I see it a lot in his writing, and I like the tide pools, you know. But the way he puts it is tired pools instead of tide pools, which is really, really interesting to me. Powerless tides pulled by an aggressive moon.
Clever wordplay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, tide pools are very interesting because they're little ecosystems kind of by themselves.
Oh, yes.
But
yes,
they get washed over by the ocean. So there's something that's constantly affected by everything else, which is always a great little, microcosm of a lot of different societies that you can say. And, you know, to have him kind of use that, eyes glass over, tide pools reflect, powerless by an aggressive moon, a crash upon the shore, erasing my footprints, I walk renewed again, is very interesting. Usually I hear the tide pools as being, like there's a song I know I always quote Rush, I'm sorry, this just always, to me there's always a Rush reference, but they have a song called Natural Science, and there's a line, living in the pools, they soon forget about the seas. And a lot of times that's what we think of as these kind of little microcosms, but the tide pools are constantly, even though they are little microcosms, they're constantly affected. Like the ocean comes in and out, and the moon affects that, and new things are coming in. So there are ecosystems, but they're constantly changing and getting crashed over by the rest of the world. And that's, I think, what he was seeing in that picture,
which is
you know, half a face and all that. So it's a very, very interesting perspective on that, Scott. I thought that was great.
You're right, and as looking at it, it almost looks like the picture is a tide pool.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you say I was right? That's the nicest thing anybody said to me all day. I'm very happy now, Bobby. Somebody said I was correct today. I will. I'm gonna write this down. Let me see. 10:18 p.m. 4:01. Bobby said I was right. I'm gonna write that down.
Doesn't count for much.
Yeah, I know. I gotta remember though. And Amy says, yes, agreed. Tired pools, clever pay on words. I also love the opening line. So she loved that as well, too. So thank you, Amy. All right. We are cranking right along here. I like that. Where is our next one? All right. So our next one, and I guess this will be me that will read it, will be by Hats, who I really like. And
oh, yes.
I'm going to post that. And this is called... Well, I think his name is Emily, I believe. And I'm going to read, yep, it is Emily. And I'm going to read this one by Emily. It's called Ungrafted, and it is also for prompt 9, the same one that Scott just did.
Okay.
I bloomed for you with blush on the cheeks, the same as an apple tree with pink blossoms blooming. That full moon night, your words soaked my guts the same as sour milk invades a cup of black coffee. You broke me with a rough storm. I'm dead now, an ungrafted tree. Silence ripens in me, and I don't call you. Leave me ungrafted, don't step on my ashes. Spell on the wind to blow me. End poem. Bobby, calling on you again first.
I'm still thinking. Not fair.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. One of the things I noticed, and I'll have to look back on hats because I don't think she does this every time, is there are no capital letters. Even the first I is a lowercase.
I do that.
Knowing
I
her,
do that with
I
do that with
purpose,
my brevity.
I believe.
Yeah, I do that with
Be
my brevities. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my style with my brevities, is everything's lowercase.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Is there a specific reason why you do that?
Yes. It's the compactness of the verse, I think, lends itself to a smaller lettering, and I just like to keep it compact. And I think that just for style and appearances, it pleases me.
I like it. That's a good reason.
Yeah.
For this one here, the reason what I'm getting out of it is, you know, this person's kind of broken. You broke me with a rough stone. I'm dead
yeah.
now. I'm ungrafted. Silence ripens me. So even that first I, that really struck me, and I think that's significant because it's not an I, capital I, me. You know, this is an I. This is a kind of a broken person, right, that she's saying. And that's hence the picture that we have there. And ungrafted is really, really interesting. I'm, you know, broke me with a rough stone, an ungrafted tree. And then leave me ungrafted, don't step on my ashes. So it's kind of like, you know, you broke me, you've done your damage, just leave me alone now. You know, somebody who is really hurt. And, you know, she has ungrafted here as wild, uncultivated, growing in the woods. She put a definition that she was using of it. and I see that, like, she's, you know, this person put themselves out there, and then they were just,
yeah.
they were used and abused, or whatever happened, they were broken. Now leave me alone. You know, I'm done. I'm wild. I'm growing. I need to grow again, right? I need to be left alone so I can, the ashes can, you know, ashes, from ashes spark, right, the phoenix. So I can grow again. Spell. So I think that's, I thought that was really great.
Yeah. This is a beautiful piece. Your words soak my guts. The same as sour milk invades a cup of black coffee. I like the way she said invades a cup of black coffee, because when you pour sour milk and coffee, it just, the curdling, it just lumps and chunks, and it doesn't
yep.
blend. It just floats and breaks up. You broke me with a rough storm. I'm dead now. The two lies that just leapt out, silence ripens in me, and I don't call you. Thought was just beautiful. Silence ripens in me, and I don't call you. That, I think, is, and that's almost a poem in itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a beautiful piece. Another honorable mention. A beautiful piece of work by Hatch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did like that as well, too, where I've been thinking about that a lot more when I've been writing poetry myself is – When you have a noun and you're describing what it's doing, it's taking it outside of its normal thing. So I did catch that too. The sour milk invades, silence ripens, you know, something where it's not normally doing it, but it's an interesting description of it. I've been trying to work on that. I think she did a beautiful job of it.
In one of my pieces, I said, we are together tonight and we are wildly quiet.
Yeah. And Amy with another great comment. It's beautiful. She said she likes the silence ripens me, really evocative, and your words soaked my guts. She liked that as well, too. So,
yeah.
Excellent,
yeah,
Amy.
Emotional.
Thank you for your comments.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Eventually, we're going to have to drag her out of the cheap seats, get her to come on board. Grace
yeah,
us
yeah.
Maybe
absolutely.
We could tempt her with wine and chocolate and, you know, something.
I guess I gotta think of the name. Who did I hear? Somebody read one of my poems. I think it was Phil's show. and somebody read one of my poems and said, oh my God, I don't think I've ever heard this guy talk before. It's like the greatest voice I've ever heard. Who was it? I'll think about it. But yeah, I'm always excited and usually very impressed when we hear people's voices, especially, you know, if they read their own poems. So yeah, don't be shy, people. Come on the show. There's a number of
poets out there with male and female with really outstanding reading voices, and to hear their work, their voices, it lends a gravitas to it.
It does. All right. Yep, we're cranking along here. So this one is by Vakachuk, and this is All For You.
Okie dokie. We have Queen Miss Marple by Vakachuk. No one would ever suggest Miss Marple would ever be less than capable of efficiently overseeing her queenship, or is it a queendom, regardless of its acreage or not. Each of the tasks exacting standards accomplished with strict accuracy, no waste. Her living spaces comfortably sterile, landing spaces for dust motes forbidden, and heaven forbid, for children. Nary a problem, really. As a truly scrupulous queen, surely reserves no space for a man who may wish to share and thus diminish her power over all she controls. End poem.
Very interesting. And am I correct that Miss Marple is not Miss Marple, right? It's Miss Marple is the correct pronunciation of that character.
It is
Marple. So that's the... Okay.
Miss Marple, I believe, is one of Agatha Christie's characters.
It is, yes.
Yes, and the prompt is prompt 10, which is a very imperious-looking young woman who is her hair is piled on her head, it's up, and she's wearing a black velvet, but she's wearing a lace collar over an open over her very long statuesque neck and a very ornate necklace coming out from underneath it. So she looks very regal. And wearing bright red lipstick, and so she looks like she would not suffer fools.
Interesting. Yeah, so it's Miss Marple is the character, and this is Miss Marple, which is really interesting. I'll have to make sure I look up that. But you know, this is no, you pronounced it correctly, but the actual Agatha Christie is Miss Marple. So she spelled it differently. Vakachuk spelled it differently here, which is interesting. I'll have to look that up later and try to figure out what that means.
Yeah, but this is an interesting interpretation of this prompt. I see where she could see all of this very rigorous reign over her environment. Everything just so. She straightens pictures, dust wouldn't dare invade her home, nor children step on her lawn. So,
I thought it was great too. I think it's, it is an interesting character. You know, Miss Marple is one of those earlier, early written female, strong female characters that comes up. So to use that as the metaphor is really great because it was, a time obviously when back then when, there wasn't as many strong female characters, not like it certainly is now. So, to show that and, surely reserves no space for a man who makes her scare unless diminish her power over all she controls. So just kind of take that person to be a little bit more stronger. I thought was great. Mm-hmm. Agatha Christie is one of those people that for some reason I always think of as in like the 1800s, but then I find like interviews with her on YouTube. I don't know why I always think she was so much farther back, but she's one of those people like Dr. Seuss. Like I can't believe she's a real person, but she is.
And she herself had a very intriguing life. There was a point at which she disappeared for about 5 days, 11 days. No one knew where she was, and there's a lot of speculation as to where she was and when. And actually, a couple of films were done on that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, she's a great.
Completely disappeared. She resurfaced, but she completely disappeared. No one knew where she was, and there's a great deal of speculation as to what occurred during that period.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, my wife's a huge fan. We watched a lot of the television shows with I forget the other guy's name, the little guy with the mustache, but Miss Marple. Yep, Hercule Poirot. Yep.
Hercule Poirot.
Absolutely.
An interesting portrayal of Poirot. Through time there have been different actors portraying him. Albert Finney, Peter Ustinov. Another one whose name I can't recall, and I should remember it because I can see his face. But also, but the most interesting one I've seen so far is now I'm doing it again. My brain. He has just done. He did the redo of the Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh yep.
And they did,
which was really good.
Yeah, and was it Murder on the Nile? And he does a much more he does an interesting characterization of Poirot, because he doesn't simply glaze over him. He goes into why Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he also directed them. He goes into Poirot's motivations, his character traits, what makes him what he is. You know, what is it about? You know, but he has a past also. And in the past films, that you know, you don't get a sense of Poirot having a past. Well, in the current films, you do.
Oh.
You do get a sense of there are things driving him. That occurred in his past, over which he has little control. Now, I will say that there in Murder on the Orient Express, there is one eminently quotable line in the beginning of the film, where the antagonist, who is played by Johnny Depp, sits down opposite Kenneth Branagh's character Poirot, and he says you're a strange little man. And he said, and Branagh replies, and Poirot, he replies, he said, I'm to the stage in my life where I have realized that there are things that I like, and there are those things that I do not like. And those things that I like, I enjoy enormously, and those things that I do not like, I cannot abide.
Yep. Excellent.
I love that.
And,
I love that.
And,
you know, that
Andy pointed out. Amy pointed out that the Agatha Christie mystery was actually on a Doctor Who episode too, which I think at like whatever crazy season or anything, everything's been on a Doctor Who episode, but that makes sense. All right, cool. Now, I'll read the first one, but if you want to introduce our artist for the evening that we're talking about.
Oh, are we there
great.
Already? Are we there?
We're there already.
Yay. Okay. All right. Well, I have to make a confession. I had two of his posters hanging on my apartment walls, my very first apartment, with the plastic furniture. my bedroom furniture was plastic. Don't ask me. It worked. It was $156 a month. I was a sergeant, and it was my very first place, my very own. And my TV stand was two foot lockers, one on top of the other. And the TV was secondhand from my parents. And it was black and white, and it quit on me. So I took it to the shop where I fixed radios, and I troubleshot it, and I fixed it myself. Anyway, I had two of his posters on my walls. I had Passion, and I had the one with the Pegasus. I'm looking for it. Son of a gun, where is it? Passion was one. And the other one was Restrictions, because Restrictions just spoke to me. I mean, he seems so tortured in that picture. And I had those hanging in my living room. So I had memories of those. And when I started looking through surrealist artists, I had memories of that particular piece of artwork. And so I hunted, and I was able to find John Petrie and his whole body of work here, and he's very prolific. He's also very creative. He's an inventor. He's a scuba diver. He's well, it's all in the write up. I mean, he's very accomplished, and still out there and still generating art. Bless his heart. But I thought this was an interesting, especially very vibrant colors, beautiful, almost photographic attention to detail, and some very interesting points of view on at the time, especially in the 70s, the state of affairs of the world at the time. You know, things were not happy in the early 60s,
right,
or in the
right.
early 70s. Things were not happy. We were just out of Vietnam, and you know, being in the military was not terribly popular. And he also addresses. I don't know if no one wrote to it, but I think someone included it as one of the prompts. The Israeli martyrs, the shooting of the Israeli athletes at the 72 Olympics. But anyway, so I thought once I was able to discover where his body of work was and harvest it, I thought he would be a good candidate for a contest, and I guess I was right again.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's great, great stuff. And, I've posted the first one. I will give this one a read. So this is by our friend Ben Hart, who everybody should check out the poem because he put, as always, some of his own artwork on there, which is great. It's a great piece of art, absolutely. This is called Blue Youths. No, part one, Morning Star Identity. Divine dictator, will you ever make amends? You told man to love the agitator, but still saw morning star descend. O flawed creator, could you tell me when forever ends? To what extent will the weight of my name remain? At the dying of the flame in the lantern of youth, when everything becomes one with the expanse of age, casting pocket change expectations down the well of identity, surrendering to self-abnegation, in search of social sanity, chasing empathetic affirmations. Am I on the path of vengeance, or will it lead finally to the dawn of self-serenity? Part two, Eden and Gethsemane. And Jesus may have wept for Judas's sake as he felt Icarus' pendant lips leave, but could never forgive Lilith's snake that slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. Part three, Drifters. Drifters with dreams of flight couldn't stand waking's decay and hung themselves from their kites and get well soon balloons, thinking maybe that way they get to heaven soon. Part four, The Passing. I said shadows didn't weigh anything, but you said yours felt like an anchor. It's every cancerous retreat into your chest. It got the best of me, then left. I asked for a goodbye, but you said you didn't deal in those, and that this wasn't farewell anyway, just God calling you home. Dear me, tell me, dear, in what metric you expect me to measure your absence? Depth, perhaps? Tell me, then. How is it you're only 6 feet deep, yet I wake at rock bottom every time I'm expelled from sleep? In the rubble of the temple our marriage built, they don't give out scars for this kind of violence. The way a house becomes a tomb, but cruelly ushered in by seismic silence. Now it's my pen keeping you alive, chasing emptiness across the pages, and I was really holding out that against its nature, time would one day ease the aching. Part five, No Surrender. When anxiety entrenches upon every end of apathy's no man's land, and the sighing shells are falling fast. Put your wrist to your ear. Listen to your blood rush past through racecourse veins. Here comes the Carmen Cavalry. Remember, they may look like mountains, but giants are only as large as the shadow they dare cast. So charge, and what you cannot kill, hold it fast, because it's probably meant to last. God is not willful when designing our paths. If he didn't think you could do it, why would he give you the task? Youth. Neon lips, a thousand-yard stare, focusing on nothing as best to frame the rest. Dancing on the football pitch, scream our names from the bleachers as if glory was but a day away and love would take us there. braiding a bouquet of daisies into your Padme ponytail, just so wandering hands would have a garden to come home to. And had you asked me then, it would have been the golden age of youth, but we had to shed to grow up, and youth was the easiest to lose. End poem. And he did a lot of prompts on here, so all right, I'm going to give my voice a rest after that and let Bobby have some comments.
Where to begin? My goodness, he's written as a book here. This is quite. I'm impressed the amount of work that he is involved here. And the way he's divided it up, and the prompts. I mean, the first poem he gave us were prompts 2 and 15. The second one was prompts 1 and 28. The third was prompts 9 and 10. The fourth was 24 and 25. The fifth was 17 and 26. And the sixth was prompts 20. And he put his own artwork at the top of this, by the way. I don't know if you realize that that is his artwork.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. He's quite the artist. Maybe we should do a contest on him.
Yeah, there was one actually done. I forget who did it. There was actually one done a couple I think about a month ago, which is pretty amazing. But yeah, later on this year, I think we probably should. We could do another one. I think
who
that
knows?
Should definitely be on the list.
Yeah, but this is marvelous storytelling. I mean, the way he transitions, Morning Star and Identity, and you look at the prompts and you can see where the inspiration is, and I'm at a loss as to pluck anything out of here that stands out, because each one of them stands by themselves so well. At the dying of this flame, in the lantern of youth, when everything becomes one with the expanse of age, and casting pocket change expectations. What a beautiful phrase, pocket change expectations down the well of identity. Surrendering to self-abnegation in search of social sanity. His vocabulary is beautiful. His application of words is exacting. I mean, there's precision in each of these that is so to be admired. There's no embroidery here. This is all very, very, very clean, a very exacting verse. Chasing empathetic affirmations. Am I on the path of vengeance, or will it lead finally to the dawn of self-serenity? And then Eden and Gethsemane. Jesus may have wept for Judas' sake as he felt Iscariot's penitent lips leave, but could never forgive Lilith's snake that slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. Four lines, and it tells a story. I mean, that's amazing. And again, the same one with Drifters. The Drifters is fascinating because it's all these little they look like balloon almost. And I like the Drifters with dreams of flight couldn't stand waking's decay and hung themselves from their kites. I mean, each one of these is a gem. And in the aggregate, this is just such a delicious, delightful read and piece of work I'm going to stop right now. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep going on and on and on. when you were reading. There was one passage, remember, they may look like mountains, but giants are only as large as the shadows they dare cast. He's got some beautiful metaphors and phrases in here. I mean, I think I'm going to throw this one at an FPP.
Yeah, it's well-deserved. And,
yeah.
You know, the way I was really taking it with the, you know, the kind of post-apocalypse theme of his writing was he just kind of, you know, he took all the different pictures, because there's so many he took, and kind of had different takes on that. I thought was great. So a couple I'll just point out real quick. So I thought number two, I can just read, it's only four lines. And Jesus may have wept for Judas' sake. He felt Icarus' pendant lips leave, but could never forgive Lilith's snake that slithered into even Eden. It has way with Eve. To me, that's that beginning, right? Like he can forgive, you know, the everything in, you know, in the Bible myth, whatever you want to call it. It's you know, everything was perfect, right? And then the snake came in and kind of ruined everything. And then everybody was faulted after that. So I can forgive everybody for this. But that thing that started it, and that is an interesting way to think of, you know, post-apocalyptic stuff, is everybody now has to deal with what's going on, but what that thing that started it that you don't want to that's really
yeah.
the bane, that's really the evil. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
There was one other line here that was, where was it here? Oh, tell me, dear, what's your metric? You expect me to measure your absence? And then he says, depths, perhaps? Tell me then, how is yours is only 6 feet under, yet I wake at rock bottom every time I'm expelled from sleep. That's so deep and dark.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get to be dead. Like your pain is gone, but I have to wake up in this horror every single day. You know, like that's, you know, what a really dark thought. And that it can be post-apocalyptic too, right? Like everything was good, and then the world is now a disaster, and I have to deal with this. It's really interesting. And then that's I really like how he did youth at the end, which is great, because, you know, when there is youth, it kind of grows up in whatever horrors are going on. They don't know any better, right? This is what they have. So, and sometimes when things are horrible, right, you take these young kids who grow up in, you know, war-torn places or whatever, they lose their youth. They shed that. And now they just have to grow up faster and just kind of deal with things. So,
I found what I was looking for. It was in the passing, his last two stanzas. In the rubble of the temple our marriage built, they don't give out scars for this kind of violence. The way a house becomes a tomb, so cruelly ushered in silence. Now it's my pen keeping you alive, chasing emptiness across the pages, and I was really holding out hope that against its nature, time would one day ease the aching. Those last two stanzas are just devastating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, this definitely deserves an FPP. I think you should put it there. Absolutely. This is
absolutely.
one of his best written. And Robbie, I forgot to announce Robbie on the board. Robbie, thanks for Robbie's poetry.
He said, how could you?
Yeah, I know. Bad host. And he said, it's like the environment now. Our generation is the one dealing with the biggest implications of environmental. Yep, absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
You know, I think
now that we oohed and awed over Ben's piece, let's continue on, because we have some more stuff that's really good out there.
We absolutely should, yeah. We want to make sure we get to as many as we can. So this one is for you. I'm going to start trying to post the people that are on the board. So this one is by Jenny Hunt. If you can honor us with a read, Bobby, that would be great.
Okay. Waiting for it to post.
Yep, should be there.
Okay, let me refresh. And there it is. How about that? Okay, we have Master of Surrealism. John Petrie, a modern-day Da Vinci, master of his surrealism art on display, questioning humanity, and brought issues up before his time like nuclear war and overpopulation. Popular pioneer of rebreather scuba systems and an influencer of art ominous surreal storytelling. Truly a talented thinker and philosopher, selling renditions of restrictions, conveying one's limitations in life and insufferable ecological deterioration, encouraging one's moral behavior. His publications and paintings will live on for decades to come. Enlightened is the dawn as the moon sets on his. Sharing visions, sparkling, picturesque epiphanies. Inspiration comes from the marbled marigold blood moon painted in the twilight mysterious skies, hoping to lead the mundane and dull by the shining lights on his rare hidden bridge to the realm of morality. End the poem.
Excellent, as always, Bobby. And she said it was inspired by the first link in his biography. And that's really great. I always like it when, and we usually get one or two of them that don't write to a prompt, but they actually write to the poet and like a dedication, which is great. And I really like, I'm going to kind of focus a little bit on the modern day Da Vinci, because that's a really interesting take on that. And my thing about Da Vinci was always that he was a reflection of life around him. It was very, very realistic a lot of times. And he, everybody knows he not only did the paintings, but he also did, he was an architect and an engineer, but his, what he did, just like Michelangelo did the same thing. And that, in that time, they were very, very realistic. Like, they were really trying to reflect what's happening around. And I think just like Robbie said on the board, his paintings here can certainly be interpreted by, the craziness that's going around us. I mean, I been alive for 50 plus years, and the last, I don't know, we're going on with 10 years have been the craziest I've ever seen. Just it's so much of the, at least in the United States, is just seems out of control. And his paintings, a lot of times I think do reflect that. And so I think Amadeo da Vinci is really, really interesting way to take that. I didn't think about that, but it makes perfect sense, Jenny. I think that's brilliant the way you did that. And then just to kind of talk about everything you did and shining lights on his rare hidden bridge to the realm of mortality, which is really, really interesting, because it is kind of talking about our mortality, right? Again, the apocalyptic theme. So awesome as always, Jenny and Bobby.
It is an interesting retrospective of the painter's biography, and highlights some of his accomplishments. And and I like the way she departed from that, from the last stanza, gave us some interpretive poetry on one of his prompts. On prompt, I'm looking, I think it's number six. And she I like the way she wove that into the rest of it. So nicely done.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, we will crank along here. And Amy said, lovely poem, Jenny. Lovely to describe the color as twilight with mysterious skies. Yeah, that's a great description. I could not agree more.
Yeah,
all right,
is nice.
We're going to crank on. It is. It's a good one. All right, Amy's, yours is going to be next after I read one, so it's coming up. So, Bobby, you get to read Amy's. But first, I'm going to read one by Jaddy Premastia, and I'm going to post that on the board here.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie, Smokey. This is called The Infernal Banquet. And for those following along, it was also multiple prompts of 27, 28, 33, and prompt 2. Excuse me. The Infernal Banquet. In a crimson morning, I awoke with a start. Bursts of demonic laughter shook my heart. The world had changed whilst I slept. And for the bygone days, I groaned and wept. Everything was different just yesterday, before I closed my eyes to end the day. Now all is fire and brimstone and dust, and our treasured things are conquered by rust. In the midst of this hellish iconoclast, where sanity is treated as an outcast, the demons have prepared an infernal banquet filled with delights and pleasures degenerate. All that we hold sacred is defiled, and our traditions are brutally trampled as the insanity mounts higher and higher amidst the incessant, hideous laughter. This blasphemous sacrilege has bled dry my heart, and the fortress of my sanity almost torn apart. My soul is plunged into the abysmal darkness, without succor and hope in the total blackness. Humanity and its civilization are lost. The apocalypse is staring us in the face, all as all that is precious has turned gross. the curtain must now be drawn for our fallen race. This is the price we must now pay for the fruit which we ate that fateful day when we choose the venom of the seducer in defiance of our supreme benefactors. The necrosis has taken us all. As the world burns and edifices fall, once more the Tower of Babel stands tall, and the song of decadence is sung by all. Now, as this infamy continued to spread, amidst the universal pandemonium of dread, I lay my lethargic self on the crumbled bed, hoping to have peaceful sleep of the dead. 'Twould be best if I be lost in slumbers deep, dreaming of epochs filled with treasures we keep, till that day come when I shall be awakened together with all the blessed dead who have awaited. End poem. Go for it, Bobby.
Excellent read.
Thank you.
That was not easy read. You got a piece to read either.
No, I keep getting these long ones. I gotta get some water over here.
Well, why don't you give the long ones to me? I don't mind.
I'm gonna get the next one. All right. But anyway,
that's
go ahead.
Fine.
Comments.
I've got a lifetime supply of vodka sitting here, so I'm fine. Now this is an interesting piece. I mean, he is really, really captured the essence of Petrie's dystopian theme in his artwork, the infernal backwood. I mean, and he's rhymed it pretty well. I mean, he's just, there's a couple of hiccups in here, but not bad, because he's gone to assonance, which works. It's a very rhythmic read, but it's great storytelling. I mean, the visual imagery is there. I mean, this blasphemous sacrilege, his blood is dry, and the fortress of my sanity almost, as blood dry my heart, and the fortress of my sanity almost torn apart, my soul is plunged into the abysmal darkness and without succor and hope in the total blackness. Wow. I mean, he's really, it's a very dark piece, but so in keeping with the brooding dystopian themes of all the artwork featured by Petrie in this particular contest. So I say he is captured. He only selected 27, 28, 33 and prompt 2, but I'll say overall he's really captured the theme of the artist and the essence of the feeling of the artwork. There, he's really done a fine job. Like I said, great storytelling too. Very dark, very gripping, very gritty.
I agree. It's definitely a warning sign. And when I was reading it, I noticed there was one I thought was interesting. I think I know what he did. So there's one in particular stanza, which is, "All that we hold sacred is defiled, and our traditions are brutally trampled. The insanity mounts higher and higher amidst the incessant hideous laughter." There's no rhyming there. The only one that has that. It's interesting the way that you put this, because if you look at the beginning, it's him waking up and saying, wow, what happened to the world? Now all of a sudden the demons have prepared in the fertile banquet filled with delights and pleasures degenerate, and they start causing chaos. So even his rhyming is now not rhyming. The chaos of the poem is actually showing. And I think that's why he did that on purpose. And then he starts doing it again. Then he gets back into the rhyming again. So I think that's really – I'm going to take that as on purpose, because I think that's what he did, and I think that's brilliant. But yeah, the whole overall theme, is interesting, and I think it's one of the, I'm a big fan of science fiction like Star Wars and Star Trek, because it's like a positive future. It's like things are okay, even though Star Wars is in the past. But it's like the world, there's good things, whereas a lot of science fiction is apocalyptic, right? Like Terminator, or if you ever seen Waterworld, or a million of them. And those are important to do, because they are a lot of times warning signs of things to come. And I think it's something important to always look at. So, it's really good when pop culture, meets with society and actually has a message, and those are important, and that's what this reminded me of here, is just almost like a description of a movie or a story, like the beginning of something where it's describing what's happening, and then now we'll start getting into the characters. So great job, Jaddy. My first time, I think, reading
it's
you that I remember.
For us.
And
it's
a good
one for us.
I really liked it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, cool. And now we're going to continue you being Amy being the scribe and you being the voice. And I'm going to copy this here and post it. Oh, Amy had another comment here. Very interesting. She said, I just enjoyed how he described insanity as where sanity is treated as an outcast.
As an outcast, yeah.
Yeah, and that was an interesting one, yep. All right, Amy, we're going to read your, Bobby's going to read yours now, so go for it, Bobby.
Here you go. Drum roll. Okay, we have Tug of War. The globe cracks in half, tectonics ripping up gaping seams of bedrock minerals, spilling molten lifeblood to the void. Torn between nature and harsh innovation, branches and wires, leaves and sockets, its clouds drifting away from its broken carcass. Both pure and wet with sun-warmed rivers, those produced, gray and tainted, spewed from exhausts and stacks and vents. Pipelines dig deep into its face, harvesting its innards, undoing the work of sown roots which bind that rocky flesh and muscles tight. Yet still nature pulls with all her might, fighting for the green along its edges, the pearlescent blue of its draining oceans, the lives which flit in the spaces left to them between the glass and metal, plastic, and the harvested remains of nature's staunchest warriors. She fights for them, both the living and the fallen, ready to bind and transform those hard imitations of nature's forms into the soft beauty of spring blossoms, longing to stitch the world back together. End poem.
Excellent read, and I love the nature theme in this. Nature pulls with all her might, fighting for the green along its edges. And, you know, you see that as any of you who are a homeowner here, you know that you have to weed whack and you have to do all these things because basically grass will grow wherever it can, and it'll eat your house. It'll eat your driveway, and you can't let it do that. Nature does take over. You know, at the beginning here in Massachusetts, in the U.S., when the pandemic hit, and it was very, you know, it was, to me, it was very apocalyptic. And I hate to say this, but about 6 months beforehand, I swear in my life, I was walking around when I was walking at night. I kept having visions of not an apocalypse, but just like empty streets. And when it actually happened, it was very surreal. And I would take walks around the street, and everything was so quiet. You know, there was this, we shouldn't forget, there was this time during the
creepy
pandemic when nobody was really doing anything. You know, everybody was just staying in their house. Remember, everyone was getting like food delivered and washing money and all this crazy crap. And I noticed nature coming back. I mean, I really saw, like when I would walk around, I would just see, you know, rabbits and squirrels and geese and all these things just seem much more prominent. It's like nature was really trying to like come back pretty damn quickly. So that was really, really interesting to me. What was this other part I was looking at here? So the lives which fit the space between them, between glass and metal, plastic, and the harvested remains of nature's staunch warriors, ready to bind and transform those hard imitations of nature's form into the soft beauty of spring blossoms. We try to imitate nature a lot. We chop down trees and chop down things, and then come up with our own little grasses and so forth, which is really interesting. You know, we have to come to a peace of with everything, with each other, but also with nature, where we're not destroying it. We have a harmony is the means of everything. So I thought this embodied, Amy, all of that beautifully, where it wasn't just apocalyptic, but it had a kind of a message of, you know, work with nature, and nature is going to try to fight back, which means if we, you know, work with her, with nature, things will be okay. You know, longing to stitch the world back together is what it always does, right? So really interesting, great ride as always. And I like that tug of war. Tug of War is a great title for this as well, too. So beautiful, beautiful. What did you think while you were reading it, Bobby?
I enjoyed the title is good. It portrays the conflict between nature and man, and it's strange that that I'm reading this, and I earlier today was able to buy the newest Avatar film, the second one, The Way of Water. For those of you who haven't seen it, you're in for a real treat. I've watched it like 5 times already. I can't get enough of it. But Cameron speaks to, in his first film and the second one, speaks to the conflict between man and man's pillaging of nature. And that's and it's mindless mindless and selfish pillaging of nature and his disregard for the balance that so many indigenous Aboriginal peoples the Native Americans Maori Aborigines in Australia have been their culture is woven around and is mindful of. And yet modern, we call ourselves civilized, and yet we do the things that that Amy talks about here, between harsh innovation, branches and wires, pipelines dig deep into its surface, harvesting its innards, doing the work of sown roots, we tend to just disregard what we're doing to the planet. Fortunately, there's movements and feelings afoot to try and to rectify that. But she portrays that, and I like the way she's a personified nature. As the nature realizes what is being done to her, and she's resisting it, and given the opportunity, will rectify the situation. I believe in one of the first, if not the first, Jurassic Park film, the Jeff Goldblum character says, "Nature will not be denied."
Yeah, nature finds a way. That's the first. Nature finds a way. Absolutely.
Nature will not be denied. Nature finds a way, which is absolutely true. Because if you've ever seen an abandoned parking lot, or if you look at some of the photographs taken by urban explorers who go looking for abandoned homes, abandoned farmhouses, abandoned buildings, and look how nature has that has reclaimed what man has erected. It has taken it back, and slowly, gradually, patiently, nature is patient and just reclaims what was taken from it. And it's just, there's a point at which you wonder, can we do so much harm that it's irretrievable? Her poem reminded me, and it just came to me, of a comic book, a comic book story that I read as a child. I was always reading science fiction comics along with my DC favorites, but I remember there were all these. There was a landing on a planet. There's all these explorers, and they got out of their spaceship, and they're exploring. They're in their spacesuits, and they're exploring all of these abandoned buildings and all of this abandoned civilization. And you can see how it's in decline and decay, and there's nobody there. It's completely dead. Everything's dead. Everything's gone. and they're exploring and they're talking and, you know, what happened to this planet. And they realize, they said the people of this planet didn't realize what they were doing. It turns out that the explorers are aliens. They've landed on Earth, and they realized that oil was the lifeblood of the planet, and we drained it dry and killed the planet.
Yep.
It was such a shocking ending to the story to find out that these were aliens from another world that had come to Earth to view Earth as an archaeological dig because we were dead.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's I've seen a lot of those type of things, and you know,
yeah.
But watching Paul, I'm not going to get political here, but I'm listening to some politicians saying how we should be, you know, using all of our natural resources here and not going to other countries, which I understand some of the reasons why, but you know, the just rape of the natural resources just is crazy.
Oh, please, yeah.
Robbie had a good another quote. One of my favorites too is from the first Jurassic Park. You focus on so much if you can, you haven't sucked the, you know. I think he says, you know, you were so busy trying to figure out if you could, you didn't stop to think if you should.
You should.
And
yeah.
I'll tell this very, very quick story. When I first went to college, I think I told this before, took chemistry. I think I told this on the show before, sorry, but took a chemistry class and this old white haired professor came out, basically said, "I'm sorry." And we're like, "Looking what?" And he basically wanted to tell us that he was on the team that invented styrofoam. And he's like, and that's exactly what happened. They figured out if they could do this thing. They did it. And then he's like, "I'm really sorry." He said, "I made this. You guys got to fix it." And that's what he went on to kind of say. And that was his introduction. This is why you learn chemistry, so you can fix these things. Yeah, yeah. He's one of my professors. It's an interesting. He's a nice guy, but he just, you know, they came up with this thing, and he invented fluorocarbons.
Anybody with a conscience, that's got to haunt them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, well, luckily we fixed the ozone layer, but, you know, so we're kind of sort of fixing that. But and then George Carlin, I won't swear here, but George Carlin basically said, you know, you worry about the environment, you worry about the Earth. Don't worry about the Earth's going to be fine. It'll figure it out. We're screwed. The Earth is fine. and he used a different word besides screwed. But which is true. I don't unless nuclear war comes, I don't think we can do enough damage that would actually the Earth wouldn't just, you know, right itself. Now we might take, you know, hundreds of species along the way, which sucks. But you know, we gotta come up with something better.
It would take a long, long time for the reset button to hit. But
exactly.
Eventually, hopefully, yes, yeah. But you know, there's a point at which you got to wonder how much damage is irreversible. So we could debate this all night long, but we have more poetry.
We could, but we did, yeah. We're talkative tonight. We got to get going. You're keeping me in check. We're keeping each other in check here. I like it. All right, so we're gonna crank along here, I can't even remember.
Yeah, it's 11:12 right now.
Oh yeah, we're in good. We're in good shape. We're in good shape. All right,
okay.
I think it's my turn now. We're gonna go to. Keith Palenthorpe. Yeah, and Robbie just said, yeah, we're all chatty. Yes, everyone's chatty tonight. So this is, I'll read this one, it's called Stand on Zanzibar by Keith. In 1968, a teenage John Brewer wrote a science fiction novel based on the factoid that in 2010, the entire population of the world could stand shoulder to shoulder on the island of Zanzibar. His predictions prove precedent. Nice work if you can get it. Right if you can find a job. I guess Bruner's point was and is, what is the point of standing on Zanzibar if that's all you're able to do? Fast forward to the present. It is clear that we are in danger of frying and or drowning the planet and all the diversity it contains with the casual exhaust of our passion for action and comfort. We must take our stand, well, this side of Zanzibar. The silly season is past. The piper must be paid. The paper backed by the full faith and credit of the sole remaining superpower. We can only hope that salvation does not prove to be something that money can no longer buy. End poem. Nice job, Keith. What do you think, Bobby? Bob, are you mutating? Is the environment got you?
I am. I'm talking to my vodka bottle here. I like it. It's different. It's conversational in its format, which I enjoy. It puts forth in the first stanza puts forth a poser, a question. I like nice work if you can get it. You find your job. I like the very colloquial. I like the colloquial nature and conversational nature of the poem is enjoyable. But it asks some very interesting questions. It's clear we're in danger. We must take our stand. The piper must be paid. The sole remaining power, you know, something that money can no longer buy. I like it. It's deeply philosophical, but in a whimsical way. It's lighthearted, but very serious at the same time, which is a delicate balance. I think he's done a very fine job on this, and I've enjoyed it enormously.
I agree. It had that nice kind of reflection back and forth of the fun, but also serious message. I apologize. I'm going to quote Neil Peart again. What he said was, the ones that we need to listen are never going to hear. You know, all of us can sit here and talk about how great everything, you know, what we have to do, and we all know this. The ones in power that actually can do something that we hope can actually hear these things. But to Keith's poem, as always, I thought it was really interesting and a really great point. You know, I think one of his good points is, in 1968, they figured out that there was a population problem, and what do we do about it? Nothing. In fact, the population grew crazy. I think the population is slowly starting to go. It's still rising, but I have hope in humanity. I really do. But, you know, we can talk about it. He talked about it in 1968. Nobody did anything. You know, we're talking about all this stuff now. What's going to be done?
Actually, I think that the population growth is quite declined.
I think
you've
so
got
too.
Some. Yeah, it's startlingly. And matter of fact, in some countries, there's been no growth. And I think China's got the one child or rule or something like that. And I half read a statistic the other day. It said something about for the first time in 60 years, there was zero growth somewhere. Which tells you the only thing consistent is change.
Exactly. And it's certainly that type of thing affects a lot of other things, right? But it's something that has to be done. I mean, there's just what normally happens to animals that we are is disease or famine or war or all these things, and we keep fighting it. Now we did, we lost, unfortunately, millions of people to the pandemic. A lot of people, passed away. But this is what happens when there's too many people, right? There's too many buffaloes, and then the mountain lions get them, right? Or whatever happens. That's how the world keeps in touch. And we've gone past that. We've figured out medicine, and we've figured out shelter and all these things, so we can fight that. But we have to control our population. And I agree. I think it is. I think things will get better. Amy wrote, love the alliteration. Predictions proved precedent. Yeah, that was a good one. Absolutely. All right, we are going to continue on with life here. And I can't remember. I read that one. Okay, your turn. Yeah, how can I forget? There's two of us. How can I not keep track of that? it's called old age, Bobby. That's what that's called. So
don't
what we have here is
age. I'm already there.
There you go. And this one by C. Opal, if you can give us a read.
Okay, is it my turn?
It is.
Alrighty.
It's your turn.
Woohoo! All righty. We have Ice Moon Saga by C. Opal. Homeless on the edge of time, homeless on the edges of time, unicorn of the ice moon lands. Sojourns through the ice, through the blue arch spans, with the goddess, guide of dark and light. She sings a mythic earth song that echoes Lalak river bells. They follow ruins on fading slopes, moving in a floorless gulf of snow, weighing the spent moonlit tundras, fjords, oceans and frozen streams, silent silhouettes of epic dreams, wild unicorn ponies disappeared. Watchers fly from nebulous stars, outland pilgrims beyond Mars, spaceships from far-off planets left behind imprints of wars, through jeweled waters unfurled vibrations of their bitter worlds. In misty dawn of an orange sun, a memory sent on the wind, starry visions of a Nephilim stage to find gardens and shelter again. Depart the glassy canals and storms. Begin a life in Nord's fairy realms for the maiden guide and her unicorn. End poem.
Excellent, excellent read, Bobby. And I really like that somebody, you know, instead of just the apocalyptic, somebody just took the fan. That's the first thing when I saw these paintings was not, I know it was titled about apocalyptic, but I was just looking at the fantasy of it. And then I kind of saw afterwards, so I was enthralled by that. I just, you know, I love that stuff, like I said, and I'm really glad that somebody took that aspect of it. Absolutely. It reminded me of something. I'm going to recommend something to everybody. There's if you go on YouTube and look up, I think it's the greatest documentary ever. Just YouTube that. And it's an hour and a half documentary. It's basically the history of the planet Earth. And it starts back to when, literally when the Earth was just balls of dust circling the sun. And it goes through the whole thing. And there's one part of it called Snowball Earth, which is a part that scientists theorize was the entire Earth was literally encased in ice for, you know, millions of years or whatever. And for some reason, it reminded me of that, even though it's, you know, this is different. But I just love the fantasy land she took us to here.
Yes.
In the misty dawn of an orange sun, a memory sent on the wind, and she's describing the picture beautifully. Starry visions of a Nephilim stage to find gardens and shelter, for the maiden guide and her unicorn. So I think she just really described this picture beautifully and really took us to a fantasy land that was a lot of fun. So I enjoyed it. I love that stuff. Great job, Siopal. It was very magical. Bobby, you got to read it, and you did a great job.
Thank you. I like the fact that she chose one of the very positive pieces in the collection, one of the very positive prompts, and did this wonderful story to accompany it. And it is like a very fairy tale and very mystic, very very mystical, very mythic. It takes the fairy, it takes the unicorn through an adventure. Great storytelling. It also... It captures the prompt beautifully, because if you look at it, there is a maiden in the background, very subtle, the orange sun, the unicorn on the ice. She's done a beautiful job, and I like her use of language, very beautifully descriptive. Silent silhouettes of epic dreams, wild unicorn ponies disappeared. Fjords, oceans, and ocean frozen streams, and then I like in misty dawn of an orange sun, a memory sent on the wind, starry visions of a Nephilim sage, to find gardens and shelter again. And I looked up Nephilim for those who are, you know, when I first read it, it was unfamiliar to me, and it was Nephilim are the mysterious beings or people in Hebrew Bible. Were described as being large and strong. The word Nephilim is loosely translated as giants in most translations of the Hebrew Bible. So I liked that use of that term in there. It gave it a very mythic, timeless quality to the description of the fine gardens, shelter again, depart the glassy canals and storms, and begin a life anew. Wonderful storytelling. I really enjoyed it, start to finish. I think it's a great piece, and I like the fact that it is in our dystopian contest here. It is a very positive piece.
It is, absolutely. But we are now going to go to a little less positive piece, I believe, and I will read this one. This is by Myriad Dark, and I'm going to put it on the board here. Oh, wait, I have to quote Amy because she just said it. Something reminded her of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I thought was great. Homeless on the Edge of Time. She reminded her of the restaurant at the end of the universe, which is a great reference. So thank you for that, Amy. One of my favorite books of all time are those three books. All right, I'm going to read this here called Sutured Future by Myriad Dark. Futures are looking very grim. The world is split along the seam. We're all alone, surrounded by this torture. We've given overall control. Now they've put us in a hole. There's nothing left to give except our social order. The world is split from crotch to neck. Even faith is circumspect. Religion is the opium of all our disorders. We keep handing them our wherewithal while TikTok monitors every call. Our future has been decided in bricks and mortar. Things are getting more worse still. There's nothing left, and nothing is the order of the day. The world is split between us and them. We've crossed the line of no return. There's no coming back. As we watch it burn, now our days are always spent contemplating our descent into madness and decay. It's what was forecast back in the day. You don't know from dilly shit. You never could. You never did. There are no clues. If you're sued for libel, some just take to it all. Some just like to take it all off the top to watch it fall rather than to fight for their survival. It isn't clever, smart, or bold. You never do what you are told. It leaves so little left, there is no rival. So whether you decide to take the lot, sometimes you have to take that shot. The future in tatters with more wholesale murder. And things are getting more worse still. Now we're closer still to overload. The pressure's building and might explode, causing us to chase the wind as the world around us still erodes. We might run for cover in the underground, dressed up in our fallout gowns, while all the apparatchiks jump up and down, denouncing the West as pedantic, while they're too busy in a panic. The world is split from crotch to neck. Even faith is circumspect. End the poem. Bobby, all you.
The refrain. The first time I read through this, I was like, things are getting more worse still. And I had to read it a couple of times. it was just verbal speed bump for me. But then I read through the whole thing, and I realized that he was using it to make a point. I like what he has done with the prompts. He's used the splitting world and transgressions, but again, there's so much of the other artwork in here that I think everybody's really captured the spirit of the contest and the artist, and this is really very good storytelling. I like the rhyming pattern because it makes for an interesting cadence. And I think he's done a great job of interpreting the prompts that he selected, the split world and transgressions. Really, really done to combine the two quite well.
I agree, and I really like that hit me as well too. Where is it here? The things are getting more worse still. I also like how it started. The future's looking very grim. That doesn't really set the stage for a happy poem, right? But things are getting more worse still. I do like that. I've actually been playing a lot with language, and that's one of the things I like about poetry. Is I think you can defer a little bit from normal grammar. You have those liberties a little bit, which I think are really great. So I really like that he did that. This kind of take on how things are getting worse still and worse still. The world has been split from crotch to neck. And I like how he gets into some of the other things that we're doing, where TikTok monitors every call, and he's getting into some of the other things, and including, religion is the opium of all disorders. I mean, he's kind of getting into all aspects of it, which I think is really interesting. you know, I have this theory, and I wrote about it in my book. I think we're at a crossroads of evolution, is the way I describe it, and we're basically out of the trees. We're these creatures that have developed emotions and abstract thinking, but we're still very, very much instinctual and animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're at a crossroads, and I don't know which road we're going to go on. You know, can we still have all these instinctual things, but again, we have abstract thinking, like the poetry we're talking about tonight, and we have, you know, and we have all these emotions, and I don't know if we know how to handle them. And I am a little nervous of, you know, which way we're going to go. And this is kind of, you know, what he's talking about here, I think is really great. You know, even faith is circumspect, which is interesting as well too. You know, the fact that I'm seeing, you know, you're starting to see, you know, kind of faith go down, and whatever you say about religion, you know, at its purest, at its best, it is people getting together and having faith in the goodness of the world. You know, I know there's certainly, you know, evils that come out of religion. There definitely is, but there is a good thing there. And, you know, faith itself, you know, people are just not even thinking about religion, which, you know, good or bad. I'm hoping it's not people losing faith in coming together and so forth. So very, very interesting and very, very thought-provoking as everything has been tonight. Bobby,
you know,
go for
it. You like to quote Rush. I like to quote films. There
yes.
is there's a line from Miracle on 34th Street where the mother tells the child, faith is believing in something when common sense tells you not to.
Yes, exactly.
I said that was her explaining Santa Claus.
Yep.
You believe in Santa Claus, you know, faith is believing in something when common sense tells you not to.
Yep. And Arthur C. Clarke said magic is just science that hasn't been explained yet.
Oh, yeah.
And same type of thing. So that's a great quote.
Yep. All righty. What do we get? Who we got next?
Yeah, absolutely. And Amy said the world was swift from crotch to neck. She loves that. And I like what Robbie said. And social media has sadly emphasized the worst parts of humanity. I could not agree more. So I'm only on Instagram and LinkedIn, and some of the stuff on Instagram just really hurts my heart. You know, not that everything has to be pure and whatever, but it's you know, it makes me sad. All right, we are going to go with let's see what we have here. Let's go with Garden Delights, and I'm going to take this one here and put it up, and this is all for you, Bobby, to read.
Okay. Legend. There's another one of the positive ones that I saw out there. Garden Delights, yes. She's been in, she made a comment. She's really enjoying our contests. And so I really appreciate
great.
Her feedback. Really, very, very nice of her to say so. She enjoys the artwork and enjoys the work we put into the contest. So thank you, Garden Delights, for your positive feedback. Appreciated. Legend of Luna's Coming. I dreamt of darkness sweeping our earth, an obsidian juggernaut flattening all in its wake. My heart was pounding in tune with every tremor. Foreboding was the crackle and the crunch of objects as they fell. Trees, buildings, streetlights were superseded by staccato screams of living creatures. Truly, could hell be any worse? Time passed. Light crept over the western horizon, not eastern. Was nothing the same as in past times? An enormous ivory luna rose benevolently amid dove-soft skies, drawing waves unto itself, their frothy edges riding high. Salt water overtook the accursed abysmal monster, forcing it downward to drown in its cavernous lair. Giving thanks to the new moon, we celebrated our heavenly protector, to this day, the water has not receded. Our enemy's burial chamber remains intact. End poem.
Excellent read. Yeah, this is really, really interesting. Saltwater overtook the accused abyssal monster, forcing it downward. Yeah, that's really interesting. That brings me back towards that the Earth's going to win, you know, anyway. Whatever we can do, again, unless we – I think even if we had a nuclear war, I think eventually things would just right itself and Earth would come back. I mean, if you – that documentary I was talking about, there's multiple – earth-changing catastrophic events and life seems to keep coming back. So I think this is a really interesting write. The legend of Luna's coming, I think, is great. So she almost took this mythical kind of stance. You know, you can feel almost like a Lord of the Rings type of a feel here. I'm seeing with these kind of gods and monsters kind of coming and just, you know, coming to you know, kind of right the wrongs of everything. And, you know, almost like the waters are coming to kind of wash over everything that was bad and fix everything. It's really interesting. So giving thanks, again, that last section, giving thanks to the new moon, we celebrate our heavenly protector. To say the water has not receded. So, you know, have faith in the earth, have faith in the natural way of things, and, you know, things will be okay. Great read. Awesome job. Your thoughts, Bobby?
I enjoyed it also. I liked the mythic quality of it. The picture, the title is Through a Moonlit Dream. And when the artist's titles for the works are available, I do include them. I think sometimes it gives us an insight into what the artist was thinking, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. But then the artists for the next contest, there are titles aplenty, and boy, are they interesting. But this is I like the storytelling in this. It is almost your Greek, your Celtic, your Norse mythology, the end of the earth, but the salvation of it, thanks to the goddess of the moon and the salt water overtaking the malevolent evil. So I think it's great storytelling and really not a very very not a very long piece. So, well done.
Absolutely. And Amy was saying on the board that she agreed the grammar. There's like rhetorical devices. You can change word orders and things, and you know, kind of like Yoda speak. Yeah, I agree. I think you can have fun with that. I like making up words as well too. So you know, as long as you're not, you know, people can understand you. It's fun.
Amy, what you're thinking of is European syntax. I grew up with it. My grandmother was from Poland, and I listened to her say, "Throw me down the stairs, my slippers." So that's European. That's Yoda. That's Yoda uses European syntax. That's a nice. It's a nice trick, because most Americans aren't unless they had European grandparents or European progenitors, are not familiar with European syntax. And
that might be 100% correct, because what I read about George Lucas is a lot of the like the way he got his languages, he actually stole them from like obscure languages that were alive here today. So he'd actually go to like aboriginal languages and steal words from them and phrases, and that's how he would actually get them. So interesting.
I'm trying to remember the Han Solo's friend was flying
Chewbacca.
One of the ships. The one that owned the sky station. He was in one of the films. He has a little guy who almost looks like a little puffin. next to him, and he's he says something, and I was reading at one time in one of the backstories that that is an obscure African language that he's using. And the people in the audience were, when it was screened, that in that area recognized the language.
Interesting. Yeah, that's what it comes from.
Yeah, but it was an actual African language he was using.
And that's Lando Calrissian, and his little friend's name is
right.
Numb. N-U-M-B.
Yeah.
Don't ever get me on the Star Wars stuff. I'm all over that one.
That's a really great reference. To do. Yeah, I don't memorize that stuff. It's crowded enough up there as it is.
Yeah, I don't. I'm a big Star Wars loser. But anyway, and Robbie said, "Understand you, people should." Daniel. So yeah, there you go. He's talking in Yoda speak. All right. Thank you, Robbie. All right, we're going to continue here, and it is, I can't remember whose turn it is. I think it's my turn to read.
Yes, it is.
I think. All right, so I'm going to put C.L. Howard's and give you a compliment with it, Bobby. C.L. said in his in his notes, first of all, he's using prompts 7 and 31 for those following along, but he said, this is the first time I have seen John's work. Wow, what an artist. I'm going to have to look at more of his work. So there you go. You turned him on to John, to the artist. So that's great.
Lovely. Well, my work here is finished. Well, that is one of my goals with introducing with all of these artists that I look for in obscurity is some of them are so remarkable, and I hope to introduce them to our poets, and maybe one of Pam and Phil's contests introduced me to I think it's John Parks, is a beautiful fantasy artist. I did two poems for two pieces of artwork that they had two different contests on and got golds on both of them. The beautiful fantasy artwork,
awesome.
But I'd never heard of the artist before, so it's very mutual. So I'm glad he enjoyed the artist. Like I said, he was very popular in the 70s. So go at it.
I will. And just so everybody knows, Bobby, I'm going to give Bobby credit. She does all the contests, so she gets all the credit for that. You know, fantastic job. And then that's why I kind of run the show. We switch it that way. But Bobby gets the credit. She puts a lot of work in and always comes up with great stuff. So your contests are awesome, Bobby. We always appreciate it. No, it's great. You can tell. All right, I posted this by C.L. Howard called Galilee, another biblical reference we have here. The ancient harp is played by wind, streaming river, waters send, the heat of day and cool of night as migrant birds in song take flight. In chorus, they join the misty song while raptors spy the sprawling throng and lofty clouds transcend their height to light the harp with stormy might. Spirits sail and strike the string, men in boats in fear give wing. Their lord in slumber enjoys the tune. His rest indeed, a well-earned boon. Yet wake they hymn from restful sleep, its song beyond their faith to reap. In terror they plead with wakened lord. To mock their fears, the thunders roared. As written by the ancient quill, to winds he spoke, peace be still. In haste flew they from their master's wards. Silence severing the harper's chords. In wonder they gaze upon the man whose words alone can tempest ban. With lesson taught, he rests his eyes as ancient harp in silence sighs. End poem. Great job, CL. What do you think, Bobby?
Which prompt did he say that he had written to?
He said to two of them, 7 and 31.
7 and 31. Let me, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's a pre-write. 7 is Discovering Paradise. 7 is Discovering Paradise. And 31, scanning. Come on, there we go. 31 is The Voyage of Man. Both of them have to do with sea craft. And I think this piece is, if I'm not mistaken, is a pre-write. Lucille Howard. Yep, it's a pre-write. So I think he selected quite well comps. Yeah, because that's one of the things for pre-writes. When we open up for pre-writes, I'm very tenuous about that. And he did a very fine job because he's picked two that clearly do have relevance to his verse. And I think it's a very fine piece. I like it. I like the rhyme scheme. I like the way it reads. I like the storytelling. I like that in wonder they gazed upon the man whose words alone can tempest ban. With lessons taught, he rests his eyes as ancient harp and silent sighs. I like this. It has a lyrical quality to it, almost like some of your older, W.B. Yeats or Tennyson. It has that flavor to it. Because of the language used, and he does it quite well. So I enjoyed this piece, and I'm glad we opened it up to pre-writes because I think this is a very fine piece.
Absolutely, and I forgot what boon meant in Boone, which you probably know, Bobby. You're smarter than me.
What's
that? A saying that is beneficial or helpful. Yes, I forgot what that
means. Yes,
so
yeah, to grant a boon to someone is to give them a favor or something that's beneficial or good for them.
That's a great word. I like it.
Like a favor of something, yeah.
I'm gonna find a way to use it in a regular sentence tomorrow when I'm talking to people. I like it. It's a good one.
Good luck with that.
that's my goal. So, yeah, it says a great feel. The rhyming was great. This was a pleasure to read. It really had a nice, almost lyrical feel to it, I thought it was
yes,
great.
Yes. Very much so.
The ancient harp is played by wind. Is it what a beautiful sound? What a beautiful thought that is. I think that one struck me right away. The ancient harp is played by wind. That's all, streaming river waters send the heat of day, cool of night. Migrant birds in song take flight. So they're also saying the ancient harp, right? The most pure
has,
sound of. Go ahead, Bobby.
I was going to say he also has a. Another author's note here says, the Hebrew name for the Sea of Galilee is Kinneret, and it means harp. The sea was given its name because of its shape. Spirits can be translated to breathe and or winds in the Bible. This event in the Bible reminds me of many things. Among them, no storm has sway over me when I dwell with the son of Yahweh. I like that. I like when poets give us a little insight into what into something that they've got in their pub. That's why I do the glossaries, because I tend to use obscure language and come out with weird stuff. So I always try to explain myself.
I gotcha. Yeah, and I like that as well too. That ancient and Yahweh being the oldest known name of God. But I liked. Now, first stanza I'll stay on that I really liked, which was, again, it's that the ancient harp played by wind. So the most ancient music is just nature, right? And when I took music in college, my professor gave me an interesting definition of music, which was the combination of sound and silence. That's all he called it. And then we discussed that, and it is an interesting discussion. It's not necessarily, expression and all that. It's just that combination. You know, people can hear music in nature. So I thought that was a great way to start it. Very interesting. Cool. Now, I'm hoping that our illustrious behind-the-scenes people are still there. We're boring them because we didn't have a lot of things, but I am going to put up a SoundCloud here. Oh, before we do that, Robbie, you're so nice. Robbie said, this is the best show I've heard in a while. Very engaging. He's got me thinking a lot. Thank you, Robbie. That's very, very kind of you to say that.
Yeah, especially now it's two of us.
I will say, Bobby, I think this is one of our better shows. I think you and I are just in sync really good. I will say that. I thought you and I were in sync today very, very well. So I appreciate that, Bobby. And yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what a lot of wine and vodka will do that to you. So Amy said she loved the Ancient Harpers played by Wynn. She also liked that as well too, which I thought was great. All right,
that
so
nice.
If I'm hoping we did not lose our behind the scenes people, and I am putting up by Radio Bravo, which actually has a SoundCloud. So let's give a few moments of silence and see if we can get that SoundCloud played.
Colonel Halo of His Chariot. A Balm by Radio Bravo. Read by Radio Bravo. I am Radio Bravo. Amber Sphere, Blanket of Helios. Miles High Pine Fingers Touch. Stares back in ocean's churning gas, orbiting the star in hail's shooting flares. Warm air flies molten ground, dried-eyed pier gaping light. Smiling beam bodies the carousel, they grow old, spinning skies. Waves below crash and collide, with cold hard gaze they burn holes to black. As my warmth vanishes, they erupt to war and scream. Dusted eyes watch hovering umbrella, shield squall tributaries feuding ground. Floating fire exhales photo heat, hands stretched, reaching bent fingers grasp. Bubbling grounds rotting burns, crimson monsters crashing whales, brighten night's cold light. Exploding plasma, crushing dives. Darkness invades striding horses' gallop, whirlwind vortex consuming icy bodies above. Below, inferno, battles eons rage. Bombs explode, feeding hydrogen flight. Black water envelops quiet space. Heavy mass imploding, pack parts dying. Chariots hauling pillars across streaking firmament. Box rings, its gears track the hands. End poem. Oh, shit.
Good job, Radio Bravo. I don't know if you wanted to add that end part in there, but that's okay. Yeah, this is really interesting. I recommend everybody read his author's notes. I'm not going to read the whole thing. He says, I think of the sun, or rather our sun, along with other stars in which to peer inside. But then he thinks, I also wonder how lonely it is to be a great power to have so much force and carry the weight. Then I think about how isolated it is the closer we get. I feel this isn't so far from where you are now. Everything and everyone on a little wet ball hurling through space and time. So I recommend everybody read that, but, really interesting and a great read, Radio. Thank you. Bobby, let's go with your thoughts.
I like this. Really very fine piece of writing. I looked at the prompt, and the prompt is the piece is called Trinity, and it almost looks like an orbital, a nucleus, like an atom's orbital. And it's called Trinity, but it's scrolling back up to it. Here we go. Where are you? There it is. It shows a cliff off to the side with two people standing there, but it almost is very cosmic, very suggestive of the universe, of infinity, of the vastness of space and how minuscule we are compared to it. And I think his characterization, his storytelling is wonderfully expressive. I like his storytelling. Black water envelops quiet space, heavy mass imploding, packeted parts dying, chariots hauling pillars across, streaking firmament. Great. There's a great reference to the Greek myth of Helios bringing the sun across the horizon using a chariot. Great reference there. Clocks rings as gears track the hands. This is a wonderful piece. I really enjoyed it. hands stretched, reaching, bent fingers grasp. It is great storytelling. It's great wordplay, a great use of vocabulary. It's just a superlative piece of writing.
Absolutely, and very interesting, the thoughts that he had here. So I do like his, and I can see where he's going. I was almost more thinking this as a apocalyptic, like a nuclear issue, but I see exactly where he's going, where if anybody looks at the picture, it's just a bunch of people staring at this kind of atomic-like entity.
Yeah.
And he's taking it as a creature, and what it would be. So if you were the sun, if the sun was actually a creature, right, it's an interesting thought. You know, are you, you're this powerful sun, you're controlling everything, right? I mean, you're the reason why there's life on here, and you're, you know, all of the solar system goes around you, but can that be a lonely type of a life if you're just above everyone else? Darkness invading, striding horses gallops, whirlwind vortex, consuming icy bodies above, below infernal rages, bombs, you know, it's really interesting the way he's thinking about that and almost describing, you know, how everything is happening within this entity, you know, and kind of almost what the entity might think. So that was really, it is really interesting. This is a very unique write, and I thought just both fit the apocalyptic, but also the fantasy aspect of this artist. So I thought it really captured it really well. And Robbie, last comment from Robbie here. What fascinates me with the scale of things is that if you take into account the microscopic world, oh, Robbie, don't even get me thinking about this. I'm never going to sleep now. World to go, the very largest. Yeah, it is amazing. You go to the largest of the large and the smallest of the small. And the quantum world is almost like a different physics. It's crazy. I'll give you something to think about before you go to bed. You look at the quantum world and look at the largest of like all the galaxies. It almost looks like the same thing, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway,
But
so I think what we should do is we only have a few minutes left. And we did good today, Bobby. We only have three carryovers.
Really?
So we did pretty good. So with the last couple of minutes, why don't you talk about the next show, and then we can wrap it up right on time.
Okay. Well, let me pull up my writing here so I can speak intelligently. We're next contest are going to be the mysterious photo manipulations of Michael Vincent Manolo. He is a Philippine artist who does photo manipulation. And he does some really amazing things. He's born in Manila. He's a visual artist, focuses on combining digital and traditional art. And in the process, the images use, he almost renders things that look like paintings. Bio says the scenes reflect on psychological impulses and on the way they are depicted and fused with everyday reality. His photographs and paintings explore the traditional boundaries of visual representation, where the creative powers of the unconscious are unleashed to reveal a different reality. Now, if that doesn't fry your brain. Seriously beautiful artwork. Interesting thing you will notice as you look at his artwork, you will not see any faces. People are faced away or they're hidden, which is interesting. But and the titles, I'm definitely including the titles with these pieces because you will not believe some of the titles that they've got. I'm looking at, Gentle Dreams of Going Home. Home is not a place, it's a feeling. These are titles. So I am sorry, but I will not come with you. I close my eyes to see you smile. I constantly long for those days. These are all titles. In order to bring peace and also anarchy, let us go to sleep in the clouds tonight. These are all titles. So this doesn't fuel some incredible poetry. Dreaming, but you are not asleep. There's some really, a requiem for self-destruction. There's some really interesting artwork in here. My problem is trying to cull it down to about 50 pieces. I went batshit crazy harvesting this. I've just about got it. The contest put together. I just have to load the artwork to the software, the contest software, and then assign the prompts and the titles, because I'm definitely putting these titles out there. Like I said, there's some amazing titles to go with these, go with the artwork. So I hope people enjoy this artist that I'm putting out there for the next contest. I really appreciate everyone responding so quickly to the short time period I gave on Petrie. I'm sorry, I was just so late. I won't do that again. But anyway, we're done. Bedtime,
yes,
for Bonzo and me. I thank you, Dan. As usual, you have been a superb co-pilot.
Awesome.
And I thank everyone
you.
In the cheap seats for all their comments on the board. We really appreciate your participation, your little fingers busy at work, keeping with us. And look for the next contest in the next day or so. And with that, I say buen fin de semana. Enjoy your evening. Enjoy your weekend. And hasta la vista, baby.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. Take care.